This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. We're pleased to have as our guest Michael Medved. It's been a while since we've talked to this fine gentleman who lives in Seattle by way of Philadelphia and Los Angeles in his career. And, of course, he, for those who've listened to this show and others, know he was a Yale Law School classmate of Bill and Hillary Clinton. But through the years, there has been no journalist more versatile than Michael Medved, who became famous as a film critic, but now is regarded as one of the top conservative intellectuals in his time. And good morning to you, Michael Medved.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Jim. Great to speak with you.
And also a radio and television personality, but a radio host who has one of the most listened to shows in this country, Michael Medved, who is a conservative who, if you've heard this show a few years ago, he was not bullish on President Trump when he was candidate Trump. Has any of that changed over time?
Well, I think the Republican Party has changed, and I think that's a very real problem. I mean, it's one of those things where the Democrats seem to have 243 candidates for president, and they're having a lively race. But I do think it's telling that when you talk about the race of 2020, most of the attention right now is on the other side. And I'm one of those folks who I think is very likely that Trump will be the Republican nominee. I mean, it's overwhelmingly likely. However, I do believe it would be healthy for the party and for the country if he had a more meaningful competitor for the nomination than William Weld.
Right now, William Weld is the only candidate running against the president. And generally, presidents who are not challenged from within their party have an easier time getting elected, those reelected. Those who were defeated, Jimmy Carter, who was challenged by Ted Kennedy, and George Bush, who was challenged by Pat Buchanan, they faced strong primary challengers and made a dent. Gerald Ford, challenged by Ronald Reagan. If Trump has a free trip to the nomination, does that mean he is the favorite, that he is the likely winner next year?
Well, I think a large part of that depends on who the Democrats nominate. I think if the Democrats decide to go lemming-like over a cliff and nominate Bernie Sanders, Trump will win 40 states. Trump won't win Washington State no matter what. But
and he won't lose Louisiana, no matter
correct,
what.
Correct, correct. But for most of the states in between, no, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to be viable. If they, on the other hand, nominate the other old guy, Joe Biden, I was just talking yesterday to a contributor from Fox News, somebody who's, I don't think he's ever voted for a Democrat, but he suggests that a ticket of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris could win in a landslide, carry 40 states. I'm not sure I would go that far, but I think a Joe Biden ticket with a viable running mate would be formidable.
It is curious how Joe Biden, who was a non-entity in two other presidential runs, is now the solid favorite to get the Democratic nomination. And if he were to take office after winning next year, he would be older than Ronald Reagan was when he left office. So it's 78 years old. Is that too old, or does it really matter?
Well, right now, it's so interesting to me because I'm a baby boomer, obviously. And one of the things that I wrote about and said, and this goes back to the 1970s in my first book, which was called What Really Happened to the Class of 65, is that baby boomers, being such a big bulge in the population, have always sort of held on to the center of the stage longer than we should, I think. And what my line used to be is that when we were in high school, it was very hip to be a teenager. When we were in college, it was very hip to be in college. Then it was here come the yuppies, and it was being the young urban professionals. And as I said, then when we get to be 70s, our 70s, it'll be suddenly very hip to be in rest homes. Now, we're not in rest homes unless you consider the White House one, but given the fact that Trump himself is the oldest president we've ever had to begin his first term. And Trump, if Trump serves out two terms, he will be older than Reagan when he leaves office. So what you have right now is the three front runners, Trump, Biden, and Bernie. Bernie's so old that he even doesn't have secure baby boomer status because he was born during the war, not afterward.
That's right.
But, I mean, I guess he's an honorary boomer because he lived in a treehouse at one point and was a hippie.
Well, the front end of the baby boom, which supposedly runs from 1946 to 64, is 1946. And in that summer, three U.S. presidents were born. In June, George Bush, in July, June, Donald Trump, July, George Bush, and August, Bill Clinton. And it is curious that of the three, Trump is the last to serve as president. And people generally don't, of all the other noise about him, they don't talk about his age. He does appear to be a man of boundless energy.
Yes, he does. And, I mean, we just have the testimony of his brilliant physician, Dr. Bronstein. He is the greatest physical specimen that has the greatest health of any president in history.
That's right.
And so we can't question that.
But Bronstein was fired for making the unfortunate revelation that the president uses a drug for hair loss, and that was propitious. So that was the end of the trail for Dr. Bronstein.
Well, also the fact that Dr. Bronstein indicated that the letter that he wrote about President Trump's health was actually written by President Trump, and he just signed it. But look, there's so much stuff. But the point here about President Trump is that most of the truly dire expectations, and I had lots and lots of dire expectations, have not come true. President Trump, and everyone ought to acknowledge this, has been a more successful president in most regards than anyone expected. And one could argue then he really has a right to be. I think his handling of staff and remember at one point people were very reassured about the three generals around him, General McMaster, who was the National Security Advisor, and General Mattis, who was Secretary of Defense, and General Kelly, who was Chief of Staff. They're all gone. And at least two of the three of them, if not all three, are extremely critical of the administration. And yet there are smart people now, and I am agnostic on this, who believe that we're going to come out okay with this China confrontation. I hope we do. And you do remember, Jim, that when President Trump was first elected, there was the expectation that the stock market was going to crash, that having somebody who was so mercurial and unpredictable and different and wanted trade wars and was going to try to force Mexico to pay for a giant wall, that somebody like that was going to wreck the U.S. economy. Well, the economy is not quite as great as President Trump says it is, but it's pretty darn good. And that's something that why it is that Biden or whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be is really going to need to sketch out an affirmative vision. And it's something that I just realized literally in the last 2 days. What's going to win is going to be the most conservative candidate, small c. And by that I mean conservative in the sense of no more wrenching change. I think the American people honestly want to go back to normal, something where you don't wake up every morning with a sense of dread of what kind of crazy thing is going to happen today. And I think that's why Joe Biden's running so far ahead in the Democratic primaries is because you look back now, and yes, people hated President Bush and they hated President Obama. There were some people who hated both. But you look back on that 16 years of Bush and Obama, and it wasn't that bad for either one. And I think that this is going to be overwhelmingly a back-to-normal election, which is why if the Democrats are at all smart and pitch the election in that way, I think they should win.
Well, today the president is unveiling a plan to overhaul parts of the nation's immigration system that would impose new security measures at the border, increase the educational and skill requirements for people allowed to migrate into the country. The plan, as reported, was constructed largely by Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who is a White House advisor. Michael, we're about to go to a 90-second break, but Jared Kushner, he is a man the president relies upon, and obviously this is another one of those issues that has great relevance.
Oh, it is, and fingers crossed. We'll be right back, I know.
877-217-5757, another segment with the esteemed conservative intellectual Michael Medved from the great city of Philadelphia, educated at Yale, grew up high school, Los Angeles, and now lives in Seattle. And we're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and another segment with Michael Medved. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org or call us 877-217-5757. And Tracy at the State Capitol says he asked the question that was posed yesterday to another guest about Elizabeth Warren bypassing Fox News, saying she won't go on that network. She claims it's, I'm trying to find the quote, profit machine, and she believes, of course, that it is promoting racism and other matters of American life that are not so pleasant. Your thoughts, Michael?
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's absurd for her not to go on Fox News. Pete Buttigieg, the Mayor Pete, as he is affectionately known, basically launched his campaign on Fox News and is now running in a lot of polls, either third or fourth on the Democratic side. And Amy Klobuchar did a very good town hall on Fox News. Bernie Sanders did a good number on Fox News. I think this is one of the things that the American people are going to reject. And when I say the American people want to get back to normal, it's normal for presidential candidates to field hostile questions. It's normal for a president of the United States to field hostile questions. And this idea that every single day we have a president of the United States who is attacking the media and expressing his preferences as to who to listen to and who to believe. Come on, this is my job. I get to be a media critic. But the president of the United States and anyone who wants to be president of the United States has to accept the idea that a rollicking, roistering, enthusiastic, and sometimes hostile free press is something that every president since Washington has had to cope with, and it's healthy for the country.
Got some interesting questions here. Here's one from Harlan, who asks about the impact of the Me Too movement on many prominent careers of journalists who have gone by the wayside, perhaps for good reason. This is an amazing phenomenon over the last few years. Your thoughts, Michael?
It is, and I don't know where it goes from here, because the questions are, how long are we going to dig back into the past, and what are the standards going to be? Because obviously some of the Me Too allegations, like most famously the ones against Harvey Weinstein, are horrible and criminal and should lead to the immolation of careers. But then there are others where it's more of a judgment call. I do think that this is one of those things that is unhealthy for the country in the sense of continually going back and dwelling in the past. That's why one of the things I've tried to do on my radio show every day is to avoid this obsession with the Mueller report and replaying the election of 2016. Yes, I think it was serious that Russia meddled in our election. But our focus today should be, and the president would benefit enormously if he would make this focus on what we do to avoid Russian interference in 2020. Dwelling in the past is a terrible idea in terms of hashtag Me Too. Let's figure out how we make it better moving ahead rather than excavating the past so obsessively with even some very minor media figures.
But if you had told, I think, either one of us 3 years ago that Bill O'Reilly, Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, Tavis Smiley, Garrison Keillor, Tom Brokaw would all be gone in a flash, I don't think we would have believed it. They left as though they were never there. And, of course, we know they were there and in very prominent places in the media.
Yeah, all baby boomers.
Yes, that's true. Maybe that's part of the problem.
Well, look, it is, because clearly one of the things that the Me Too movement reflects is there are very clearly different standards. I'm very proud of my 26-year-old son who is just building his business career. There are very explicit different standards about behavior and about what you can say and what you can do. In other words, and I think that that's an improvement. I don't think we've lost anything by people being a little bit more careful and respectful about their conduct.
Another question from a listener about this is an interesting one. The character that Andy Griffith played in Elia Kazan's film, it was Lonesome Roads.
Right.
Facing the crowd. Is that in any way analogous to Donald Trump?
Well, I've made the analogy with that character and the president and with other media figures. The reason I don't think it's analogous is because I don't think Trump is conscious. I don't think Trump has any contempt for his followers. I think he genuinely loves his followers. Trump is not complicated. He loves people who admire him and express their admiration for him. And he loathes people who criticize him. And it is inconceivable to me. The climax of that film, for people who don't know it, is this media giant, which is based on the late Arthur Godfrey, apparently, ruins his career by speaking when he thinks the camera is off, but it's really on, talking about what idiots, what fools, what losers his devoted followers are. And I don't believe Trump has that feeling for the people in MAGA hats. I think he really does love the people in MAGA hats.
Another listener notes that today is the birthday of one Henry Fonda, born on this date a long time ago, 1905, but you and I are old enough to remember him in his prime. Your favorite Fonda film?
Boy, that's tough because there are many great ones. Mr. Roberts is a great film. The Grapes of Wrath is a great film. I think some of his later, I'm not a great fan of On Golden Pond, for which he finally won his Academy Award. I'll tell you, A Young Mr. Lincoln is a great film. Or wait, is it Abe Lincoln in Illinois?
Yeah.
Henry Fonda, who, by the way, is from Omaha, Nebraska, which by some amazing feat, so is Marlon Brando. There was something.
And Wally Cox.
Well, yes, that's three of the greatest actors of the 20th
century. There you go. Gustavo and Goodwood. Gustavo, please be brief. You're on with Michael Medved.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Gustavo.
12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men is another one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Anyway, but back to the business at hand. Well, regretfully, what I feel is a tremendous disparity in the way that sexual allegations by ladies are handled, and one of them being Mr. Biden, who clearly has a problem touching and approaching and whatever.
All right, we're short on time, but what about the allegations against Joe Biden? Are they serious enough to affect his campaign and his qualifications to be president?
Only if it turns out he has ever actually tried to do anything untoward. And I think that frankly, Jill Biden, who has a new book out and is a very formidable lady, she's going to be a huge asset on the campaign trail to Joe Biden. And she's a very impressive figure, and they seem to have an impressive relationship.
And the allegations against Biden are in no way equal to the allegations against the president of the United States. Dexter in North Baton Rouge, please be brief. Dexter, you're on with Michael.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everyone. I'm just curious to know from the conservative reporter's perspective, How do you guys feel about figures like Ben Shapiro and Ann Coulter and the
well, they're very different. They're very different. Ann Coulter is a disgrace. And when I say she's a disgrace, I believe she says that she says things that she knows are not true. Ben Shapiro is a friend of mine, and he's somebody who is completely sincere. And I think that makes a difference. When I say Ann Coulter is a disgrace, her book, Adios America, where anyone who says to you that illegal immigrants are the main cause of crime or a rise in crime is telling a known demonstrable lie.
Michael, we have to roll. You know how it goes, but thank you so much. It's an honor and pleasure, and we'll be calling again soon. Thanks for what you do, Michael Medved.
Always great to talk to you, Jim. Thank you.
We'll be back after this pause for the news.